You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, you. Welcome to this week's episode of Sex Gets Real. I am ridiculously excited for this episode. It is a fun chat and an unexpected chat with someone I think is really smart and putting out amazing content in the world. And that is YouTube sensation. I know she'll kill me for saying that. Riley J. Dennis. We talk all about identity policing and people wanting trans people to like prove they're trans enough or that people are bisexual enough. We talk about trans woman porn and why straight men love trans women. We talk about kind of the fears that surround identities that aren't hetero and cis and straight. We talk about this weird culture we have around demanding private access to people that we see online and in the media and why that's kind of really fucked up and weird. And it's just really fun and sweet and delightful. Also, if you're listening to this on August 6th, which is the day this comes out, I am running my next Sex is a Social Skill group call today, August 6th. And the theme is anger. We're going to be talking about our relationship with anger, when it's okay to be angry, when we hide our anger, what we were taught about our anger growing up, especially since gender plays such a huge role in our relationship with anger. So if that's the kind of thing you want to dive into and explore and talk about with other really rad people, then you can check out the show notes for this episode or go to sexgetsreal.com/EP173 for episode 173 to get a link so that you can sign up and check it out. The calls are every 2 weeks. So we have talked about cherishing your partner and feeling cherished. We've talked about self-respect. It's a really fun place that's live on video. So you can hang out with me and just kind of like super geek out around all these things that we don't actually have a place in the world to geek out around. So let me tell you a little bit about Riley and we will jump right in. So Riley J. Dennis is a trans, non-binary, gay, polyamorous woman who makes YouTube videos about intersectional feminism, politics, queer stuff, and a whole lot of other topics. She thinks all TV shows and movies should be gayer. And one other quick note, I was testing out a new microphone when we were chatting, and so my sound is a little off. I don't love it, but it's the best that I could do with that new mic. Next week, I'm back to my standard one. So here is me and Riley having a blast. Welcome to the show, Riley. I'm so excited to have you here, and
hey.
I think this is going to go amazing places.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. Okay, so here's where I want to start, because it was one of the points of just, like, pure delight for me when I was watching all of your YouTube videos.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay, so
you
have this YouTube video that's all about trans lesbians and sex, and you were talking about all these things that had to do with, like, sex and different ways to have, you know, pleasurable sexual encounters regardless of genitals and penetration, but you got this box of goodies from Adam and Eve, and you pulled out their wand, and your reaction to the power of their vibrating wand was, like, it was the purest moment of just you, like, giggling and being shocked. And I just had to bring it up because in that moment I was just kind of like, oh my God, I'm totally in love with Riley.
Oh my gosh. I'm like bright red right now.
Perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea that people who have penises could use massage wands. Mm-hmm. Like, just never crossed my mind. And then I got all those things from Adam and Eve, and I was like, oh my God, how has no one ever told me about this before? Like,
yeah. Yeah, there was some really good toys in that box that they sent you.
And there was. So they keep sending me cool things, and now I'm just overflowing with sex toys, and I don't know what to do with all of them.
You could start, like, an installation on your wall.
Just literally.
Like,
here you go, all the things that can go places and buzz.
Yep, exactly. And now I'll just have them out, so every time people are coming over, it's like, hey, look, here's my entire sex toy wall.
One of my other favorite parts of that video was they sent you a bed restraint system, and you were like, so this tucks under your mattress, then you can, like, attach it to people's wrists and ankles, and you can tuck it under your mattress, or you can just leave it out, and when people come over, be like, oh, hey, this is where I have sex with my girlfriend.
I mean, yeah, it's not that subtle. It's
it's just like, it's some people are super into that. I actually, just the other day, I don't know why I did this, but my husband's really good with rope. And so we pretty much just keep, like, rope tied to the corners of our headboard so that, like, if we're in the middle of something, he can just, like, you know, tie up my wrists.
Yeah.
And I had a maintenance person coming over, and I, like, looked at the bed, and for some reason I thought, oh, two ropes on the headboard is way too obvious, so I'll just take one of them off.
What?
And so I took one off, and then he, like, came over, and literally while he's in there working on my closet, I looked at the bed, and I was like, why did I think leaving one was a good idea?
Amazing. You're like, we have kinky sex, but only, like, kind of half on the side. Like,
right, yeah. Like, no, this is for my morning stretches.
Yeah. No, I've definitely, like, left just a bunch of stuff all over the floor because I'm messy. And, like, people came to inspect my apartment just, like, through the apartment complex. They were, like, checking everyone's rooms. And they just walk into my room and, like, look around and just walk out. And I'm like, don't mind all of that.
At least you know I'm having fun.
Legit.
So, I found you because you do these amazing videos on YouTube, and while there might be mixed opinions on YouTube itself, I, like, thoroughly endorse so much of what you put out. You're welcome. And you talk about all kinds of stuff, right? You talk about...
Oh, yeah.
Feminism and sex and politics and trans issues and, like, identity policing and oppression. And so for anyone who has never seen your videos, like, kind of what is the thing you most want people to think about when they first show up on your channel?
Ooh, whoa. You know, I'm not sure. Like, I actually try pretty hard to not have, like, a specific focus. Like, the general theme of my channel is, like, social justice through an intersectional feminist lens. So it's, like, just any topic that affects marginalized people and why we should care about it. But one of the things I try kind of hard to do is to not pigeonhole myself into one, like, thing. Like, I think a lot of people, when they think of my channel, just think of, like, trans rights or trans issues or whatever. And I do talk about that a lot, like, that's for sure. But I try to not make that, like, the main thing that I do. And I try to do a lot of videos on politics and, like, other aspects of my life. Just because I really don't want to end up doing, like, one specific little thing for my whole time on YouTube, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, the diversity of the things that you've discussed make for a much richer experience. You know, it's like there's lots of little good nuggets and surprises and interesting people that you talk to. So it actually seems like a really fun thing that you get to do.
I mean, I really like it. And I mean, there's just so many intersections of things that it feels like I'm leaving stuff out. If I'm like, here, let's talk about this thing, but, like, pretend that disabled people don't exist. Like, I want to try to talk about all of those intersections as much as I can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had a couple of videos that just, like, made my heart super happy. And we were talking about, like, all the things we wanted to geek out about, which honestly, like, could probably fill, like, 4 hours.
It's a long list, yeah.
It's a long list, so we'll just see, like, where we end up in the next, like, 50 minutes.
Cool.
And then if we just, like, have so much fun, we can always do another one. But I kind of want to start with, pretty recently, within the past couple of weeks, you put out a video that was a little bit longer, and it was kind of talking about some of the things that you personally had been going through. And one of the themes for that was definitely this, there's this culture on the internet where we've kind of, for some reason, decided that it's okay to demand private information from people who are putting content out in the world.
Yeah.
And, right, and so, and, like, I get this a little bit, and just that I think a lot of people, they've been listening to me for 3.5 years, and they know so much about, like, my sex life and my marriage and the things that I've tried, that it kind of feels like they have a complete picture of me, but, in fact, it's just a percentage of me or a part of me. And so I know you were kind of talking about how, you know, you make decisions on what parts of yourself you want to share with the world and what parts are just really for you. But then there's kind of this culture, especially on YouTube, where people feel like they deserve to know your most private, intimate details, and they deserve answers. And if you don't give them to them, then you're a liar.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so I'd love to just kind of like talk about that a little bit. Like I think mostly what I just want people to know is like, you're not entitled to anyone's personal information and you never have the full story, but like, right, what's kind of been your experience in that realm?
Well, I mean, one of the things I'd seen a lot of people talk about is kind of, the side of when you have like fans who demand that information, like fans who really, really love you, but they think that they know you and they think that you're like their best friend. Because I mean, a lot of the whole YouTube persona that a lot of people have is like, we are friends, like me the video maker and you the what, like viewer, are friends, and it's like an illusion to a large degree. It's like you can have a good relationship with your viewers, but they're not your friends in the sense that they don't really know who you are in real life. They know the side of you that you put online. And so I've seen a few YouTubers talk about that in terms of like their fans not understanding that they have a life outside of YouTube, and that the like the creator viewer relationship isn't the same as knowing someone in real life. But what I've experienced a lot more of is not people who like me and appreciate me thinking that they deserve more information, but people who like detest me thinking that I owe them information about my life to somehow like prove who I am or what I'm talking about. Usually related to trans stuff, right? Like if I say that I'm trans, they're like, well, show us your hormone bottles and your, like, the times you go to the doctor and your diagnosis for gender dysphoria and your plans to have surgery. Like it's, I don't know. It's just so wild to me that strangers think that I owe them that information. That's like, and a lot of it is like very private medical stuff that I would never demand of like anybody, like not even like friends probably, like
and then like I think what's so fascinating is, you know, when you take a step back, right, like what are the identities that we don't demand proof of, and then what are the identities where we demand proof, and then what does that say? So like, we don't demand that cis folks prove that they're cis and that their gender aligns with, you know, what they are assigned at birth, and we don't demand proof that someone is, you know, a cis man or whatever it is, but then to demand proof of someone's queerness or their transness, I think is like, it just really highlights, I think, where a lot of the oppressive kind of thinking is, in that like, you can't be trans unless I have proof, otherwise I get to doubt you.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, people do it for anything that's outside of the norm, like any kind of queerness. Like if you say that you're bisexual, like people usually doubt it like to a strong degree and will like want proof that you've dated both genders and like still are attracted to both genders, like it's, or not both, but like multiple. And it's it's just wild to me, like people who have whatever identity is the norm, it's, they act as if they have no identity, like it's just because they're the default, they don't have to think about why they're straight or cis or any of that, and so they don't have to prove any of it. It's just the mindset behind like cis, straight, white, abled, like skinny being the default is like everything outside of that you have to prove it.
Yeah, I know that I've really just kind of like on my own personal level had to grapple with that a little bit, where like, you know, for years I just assumed I was straight because I had crushes on boys all through college and stuff. But then like in my early 20s, I ended up in a relationship with a cis woman. And so I started really kind of identifying with lesbian culture and dyke culture, and like that felt really good. But then I ended up in a relationship with a trans person. And so then I was like, I don't think lesbian fits anymore, but I don't know what does. But, like, I'm definitely still part of the queer community. And then, like, I ended up marrying a cis guy, and I had a lot of shame around, like, how can I prove to people I'm queer if I'm in a relationship with a cis guy? And it was this, like, fear that I was going to lose community, fear that people were going to, like, take my queer card away, you know, fear that people were going to doubt my experiences, and also just realizing, like, the inherent privilege that comes with being able to be super straight passing, you know? And so, like, it's just this weird thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, in that sense, like, in the erasure of bisexual people, I think it's super shitty that, like, if bi people end up in, like, a straight, quotation marks, relationship, that they're, like, oftentimes not considered queer enough or, like, not accepted at Pride or whatever. I mean, it's a lot of the same thing of, like, if a non-passing trans person, like, if a trans woman passes as a guy, people say that she has, like, male privilege or male passing privilege. And, like, to a degree, she probably does have male passing privilege, but also there's a lot of other shit that comes with that, and it's not nearly the same as male privilege. And in the same way, I don't think, like, being in a bisexual person in a hetero relationship gives you, like, hetero privilege, because you're not that person. Like, you can't have straight privilege and not be straight. But yeah, no, you're right that there is, like, a degree of privilege in passing, but I don't know, the need to, like, have people prove it is just bonkers to me.
So I'm glad you used passing, because that's something that I think is another way of kind of forcing people to prove something about themselves. Oh, yeah. And so within kind of, like, the realm of trans identities, there's very much this obsession with whether or not people pass, as if, one, passing is something everyone wants, and two, as if that's kind of the end goal for all trans people. And then kind of this, I think there's definitely this cultural narrative that if you don't pass, then somehow you're failing.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's so ingrained in us that there's, like, two groups, like, there's men and women, and it's impossible to like, separate that out of your head, because it's not just, like, some grouping that we have. It's like we say it all the time. Like, when you say hello to a group, you say, like, ladies and gentlemen. Like, we don't have honorifics that aren't sir or ma'am. Like, it's so hard to think of it as anything but, like, two very distinct groups. And so when someone transcends those groups, or is in between them, or is moving between them, or whatever, it just, like, blows people's minds, and they don't know how to handle it or how to classify it.
So for people who aren't familiar, which, what a lovely thing, or weird thing, I guess. For people who aren't familiar of, like, what it's like to have your identity policed. You know, I know queer folks get policed all the time of not being queer enough, or being too queer, or certainly trans and non-binary folks. And then also with, like, folks that have invisible disabilities of, like, well, you're not part of the disability community because I can't see your disability. So can you just talk a little bit about kind of, like, policing of identities and ways that that shows up?
As far as trans stuff goes, I think a lot of people who, like, outwardly say that they support LGBT rights and, like, don't really consider themselves bigoted or whatever, like, in theory support trans people, and then in real life kind of forget that trans people exist, and kind of go about their lives as if they don't exist. Like, I run into people who just immediately, like, assume I'm a man, and it's not with, like, ill intention. Like, it's not, they're not being mean, but they're not considering the fact that, like, this person could be trans, and they just make a lot of assumptions right off of that. And I mean, that's just kind of a problem in our culture. I mean, I assume people's gender immediately a lot of the time, but I try to use, like, they pronouns and stuff as much as I can to be gender neutral in general. But, like, so in that regard, I think a lot of allies, like, accidentally police people's gender, because they're just like, oh, you don't look like that. Like, you don't look like the stereotype of a trans person that I have in my head. Like, you don't look like a man in a dress wearing a ton of makeup on the side of the street, which is, like, the depiction of trans women we always see as, like, sex workers. And so if you don't look like that, people are like, but are you really trans? Like, I support this stuff, but you don't look like it, you know?
Yeah. And I think, like, it kind of circles back to that, like, proof. mm-hmm. of, you know, one way that we police people's identities is in needing them to prove to us in some way that they are who they say they are. And so, yeah. you know, like for bisexual folks, that's if you see a masculine person kissing a feminine person, you might make the assumption that they're straight and yeah. you need proof that they're not in some way. Exactly. It's not good enough for them to just say, like, I'm bisexual. It's like, oh, have you ever dated a woman or dated a man? And what was that yeah. like? And how many? And, you know, like, I need you to prove to me that you're bisexual. It's not good enough for you to just say, here is my identity. And
yeah.
And I think that kind of like goes to a lot of the stuff you talk about, where like ultimately identity is really about ourselves and how mm-hmm. we are experiencing our lives. But in our culture, identity is often kind of used as more of this like external validator of, if I can't see your identity, then it must not be true.
Yeah. And what I get from a lot of people is I feel like there's a fear that people are lying. Like, they're like, oh, well, what if you're just lying about being trans and, like, I have to use these pronouns for you and, like, it's wrong or whatever. But I, like, I've never actually seen that happen. Like, I don't know where all these, like, cisgender people pretending to be trans people are, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and even if it does happen on, like, a very small scale, I don't see the problem of people saying that they're, like, one thing that they're not. Like, but also, I mean, I don't think it is a problem of people pretending to be trans or pretending to be bisexual or whatever. But I don't know. People have such a fear of just being lied to about that stuff, and I don't fully understand why.
You know what just totally hit me while you were talking was you were saying, you know, like people have this fear that like they're lying about their identity. And yeah. so it's kind of like needing the proof, even if it's the super small percentage. And that totally made me think about how whenever you're talking about rape culture and believing victims, you always get the people who are like, but some people lie about rape. And that's like, yeah. that becomes the entire narrative. It kind of mm-hmm. like their fear of this tiny percentage of people who lie about being raped becomes the full story. And it's oh, kind yeah. of this like fear mongering that totally disrupts the conversation. So now we're not focused on victims anymore. We're focused on this super tiny percentage mm-hmm. of people that often doesn't have a lot of proof. And it's the same thing around like trans identity, right? Of like yeah, the yeah. vast majority of trans people aren't lying.
Exactly. Right. And, right. And even if they were, like, I don't feel like that hurts anybody, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, oh no, you have to use different pronouns. Like, I'm so sorry. That's so hard for you. Like, I just don't feel like it's that much of a burden on other people, even if yes. it were happening. One of the things, I mean, when people, I get it a lot from actually trans people themselves is like, you can't speak on this because you're not actually trans. And I feel like there's a lot of intra-community policing in that aspect that like, trans people often feel like they earned their spot, like they had to suffer, they had to do all of this stuff, they were treated like shit by everybody, and so now they're there, they've made it, and they have to do that to everyone else. You know, it's like a hazing thing, like I've made it and now I have to treat you like shit until you prove that you've made it as well.
That's fascinating. I just finished reading this book called The Remedy, Queer and Trans Voices on Health and Healthcare.
Okay.
By Zena Sharman. And it's an amazing book. And I actually just had Zena on the show a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, cool.
But one of the essays in the book is called Trans Grit by Cooper Lee Bombardier. And it's this wonderful little essay about Cooper's experience of becoming a trans curmudgeon. A curmudgeon. And that, like, Cooper became trans at a time when, like, you had to go to Mexico to get illegal hormone doses, and people were using like silicone from the Home Depot to give themselves fillers in their cheeks and in their ass so that they could pass as trans women. And yeah. and so in this very, very terrible time for trans folks, and so Cooper's talking about how they were sitting around a fire and all of these, like, out of this camp, and these younger trans guys were talking about, like, their struggle with their transness was not being able to find clothes that fit and, you know, not always having their gender pronouns recognized. And Cooper was kind of talking about how, like, their knee-jerk reaction was this, like, you don't know how good you have it. I fought so hard and so many friends died and you don't know where we've been. And then the very end of the essay kind of ends with, what a luxury that I get to be a curmudgeon because it means we've had progress.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. No, there's such a generational gap. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see that from all the time from older trans women. I mean, I know a lot more trans women than trans men, but older trans women who are particularly detestful of, like, non-binary people.
Yeah.
And like, because they transitioned in a time where transition had to be very binary. Like, mm-hmm. to get the hormones and surgeries that you wanted, you had to say, like, I am a man who wants to become a woman. Like, that's what you had to tell your therapist. It's, like, what you had to do. Mm-hmm. And our views have evolved over time, but these people had to go through that, like, really traumatic experience and feel like everyone else has to as well now. And yeah. But it makes me happy that we've come that far and that mm-hmm. people don't have to go through that anymore. And I don't think that minimizes the struggles that people still have to go through today. They might not be as bad as they were before, but I mean, like, shit's still happening.
Right, exactly. And I think it's just such a wonderful thing for us to recognize, like, there is still tremendous suffering in parts of the world, in certain communities. There was tremendous suffering in the past, mm-hmm. and those are such valid traumas and terrible things that no one should have to go through.
Yeah.
And, like, yes, some people had to fight tooth and nail for decades and decades and decades to get recognized, and, like, there's no erasure of that. And mm-hmm. can we celebrate that for a lot of people, it's not this huge suffering experience anymore, that it's that it's not something that they feel like they have to go all in on, because there is that opportunity to stay kind of in an ambiguous place, or to mm-hmm. be trans that doesn't take hormones or get mm-hmm. surgery or whatever it is. Like, to me, that feels like a wonderful movement, but I think people have trouble holding space for multiple truths.
Yeah, it's difficult, especially when you feel like you've been hurt and, mm-hmm. and other people don't have to go through that. It happens in all sorts of communities. Like, there are gay people who feel the same way. They see young gay people coming out and having no problem with it and feel kind of resentful about it. There are, like, people who immigrate to the United States and then become very anti-immigration because they're like, well, I got here, like, fuck the rest of you. Mm-hmm. It happens in all sorts of marginalized groups where there's certain people who just have a strong backlash against it.
So I would love to kind of take what we're talking about and shift just a little bit to a video that you did that I will just say up front that for people who are new to asking some of these questions or who don't have a lot of queer and trans people in their lives, this may make you super uncomfortable, and I want you to be fucking uncomfortable. So let's just be uncomfortable and, like, love that it's uncomfortable, because you did this great video around genital preferences and transphobia.
Yeah.
And this is something that I've kind of touched on a couple of times in the past. It's certainly something that, like, I've lived my way into as a truth. And mm-hmm. so I loved what you said in that video. And I was wondering if you would just kind of share maybe, like, a quick recap of what you said in that video, or kind of just, like, a high level, you know, how you feel about it.
Yeah. I mean, there are so, so many aspects to it. So I can't cover it all because people come up with all sorts of questions about it. But basically, my first argument, I made a few videos about it, and my first kind of general argument was that discriminating against trans people in your dating life is just pretty shitty. Like, saying, like, I would never date a trans person because trans people are so diverse and have different genitals and, like, different secondary sex characteristics and all this stuff. Like, you could never know, like, what a trans person looks like without actually meeting them. And then kind of the pushback I got from that was, like, well, I just don't want to date people with a penis, or I don't want to date people with a vagina. Mm-hmm. And kind of it was very tied into sexual orientation. So, like, a lot of people were saying, like, if you're a straight man, you are not attracted to trans women because they have a penis. Well, not all of them, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if you're a lesbian, you're not attracted to trans women because they have a penis or other male characteristics. And like vice versa for trans men, but most of the discussion has been around trans women. I don't know, in general, in trans discussions, trans women are centered more than trans men. But yeah, so in that, it became very tied into sexual orientation. Straight men and lesbians feeling very defensive and saying like, I don't like trans women, like keep them away from me. And I pushed back against that because I think it's possible that a large chunk of our socialization is transphobic to a degree, like it's or it's cis sexist, like yes. It places cisgender as like the ultimate and the perfect and the goal, and anything deviant from that as unattractive and gross and dirty. In the same way that that happens with so many other aspects of our lives, like how we place whiteness above dark skin, how we place being abled above being disabled, how we place thin bodies over fat bodies, all that kind of stuff is socialized to a large degree. And I was making the argument that it's often the same thing for genitals. Kind of what my argument got misconstrued as is you have to like penis or you have to like vagina.
Of course.
which is not something that I've ever said. It's something that people claim I said a lot, but I've never said that.
Right.
I just think a lot of the times people don't actually like detest penis to the degree that they do. They just think that they do because they've been socialized growing up that like women don't have penises. So any woman who has a penis is gross. And they've just never tried to question that or move outside of that. And I just get such pushback from that because people are so defensive and think that I'm trying to like destroy lesbianism and like make lesbians have sex with trans women. And it's like, I really don't care what you do. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to get lesbians to have sex with me. Like I don't care. I'm just telling you that you might have some internal bias. Like you might have some implicit bias and you might have some stereotypes about trans people that aren't true. And one of the things that makes this the most obvious to me is that when people talk about straight men, and they're always like, straight men don't like trans women. If you like a trans woman, you're gay, whatever. First of all, when you say that, there's a whole discussion around gender and sex, because yeah. If you're a straight man and you're dating a woman, that seems pretty straight to me. Yeah. Right. Even if it's a trans woman. And so people get into this whole thing of like, well, your sexual orientation is just based on the genitals of the other person. So like, then it's a gay man. And I just find that to be ridiculous. Like, I don't think, we always talk about it in terms of gender. Like, women liking women is pretty lesbian. Men liking men is pretty gay. Until you bring in trans people, and they're like, oh, no, it's females attracted to females and males attracted to males. Mm-hmm. But one of the things I always see is that every trans woman I know has tons of straight guys who will, like, publicly to their face be like, you're so gross, you're disgusting, I'd never be gay and have sex with you. And then they all slide into their DMs and are like, hey, do you want to hook up this weekend?
Yes! Like, oh my gosh.
Straight men fucking love trans women. Like, I don't know how to say that any clearer. Like, there are so many in my inbox constantly, and I don't even like dudes. Like, I make it pretty clear that I'm not attracted to men, and yet men constantly message me. And for straight trans women, like trans women who are attracted to men or bisexual trans women, like they get that so much more. But these same men, when asked publicly about it, will be like, ew, no, like that's gross, dude. I would never do that. That's gay, you know? Like, and we have so many documented instances of men sleeping with trans women in secret. And then the moment it's public, they flip and they murder her or they beat her or whatever. And that happens all the time. Like very recently, there was a guy who like stabbed a trans woman 119 times. And because their relationship was revealed because he found out that she was transgender. Mm-hmm. And like people just have such a visceral reaction to like trans people and no one's willing to confront that.
Yeah.
But because I know that straight men, like, will hate trans women publicly and then want to have sex with them privately, like, I know that there's socialization behind that. Yeah. Like, there's a reason you think that this is socially unacceptable, but also, like, you kind of want it. Mm-hmm. And I find it hard to believe that that doesn't happen for lesbians either. Yeah. Like, I know lesbians who are attracted to trans women. Like, it's not a myth.
Right.
And so I don't think that asking people to examine their internal biases and try to tease out if what they think is based on a stereotype or a socialization or a bias is a bad thing in any way. I think it's actually all of our responsibilities to constantly be examining our own biases.
Yeah, that's something I've talked about on the show a couple of times, and I actually had this super rad, queer, fat sex worker named Kitty Stryker on the show last year, and she was talking about how we have a responsibility to examine our attraction preferences and also our sexual fantasies, in that, like, we don't need to have shame around them, but if our sexual fantasies are all about reinforcing, like, really harmful narratives, then let's just start gently asking questions about why, where'd that come from, what's that mean, because we have a responsibility to do that. And so I think what you're saying is exactly that, of, like, you don't have to decide either, one, you're a terrible person, or two, that you have to change something. But, like, what if we just started asking, where did some of this come from? Like, maybe the fact that you don't like fat bodies is because everything you're surrounded by in media and TV and culture tells you that fat bodies are jokes and unwanted, and you only see thin bodies as sexy.
Exactly. That happens all over the place with fat people and trans people. Like, the only depictions of trans people, like, I've ever seen are, like, as sex workers. They're, like, on a cop show after they get murdered by a John or whatever. Like, and it just, the fact that there's never trans women depicted as being attractive, I feel like, has to play some sort of a role. Like, if you grew up and you're like, oh, like, look at these trans women, they're so hot, like, I feel like when you grew up, you'd have a more positive reaction towards trans women.
Or, like, the handful of trans women that we do see as very popular and visible in the media, like Janet Mock and Laverne Cox, are like ultra feminine and super passing and have talked about their surgeries, and so it's almost like they tick all the boxes to suddenly become acceptable.
Yeah, they're a good trans. Like, they're they're an exception. Like, people always like to have their, whenever people discriminate against a group, there's always exceptions so that they can say that, like, they're not whatever. Like, people who are extremely racist will always have, like, one black friend and be like, well, I can't be racist because I have this black friend. And people do the same thing with trans people. They'll be like, oh, well, I have this one trans person who agrees with me or who checks all of the boxes or whatever. So, like, that's what a trans person is and not you.
Right. And,
but so when it comes to sexual preferences and, like, fantasies and all of that, people just seem to be so defensive about it, to the degree where it's like, I could never question my sexual preferences. Like, it's just so innate. It's so, like, inside of me since the moment I was born, and trying to change that is, like, horrible to me. Like, people have accused me of advocating conversion therapy. Because, well, they think that's what it is, like, trying to change their sexual preferences. And, I mean, I've been pretty clear that conversion therapy is, like, really fucked up and, like, a form of torture and not cool. But this isn't conversion therapy. It's just asking people to examine their biases.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, I mean, I think what is making so many people really uncomfortable is, like, for instance, I get a lot of emails from people who are in their, you know, mid to late 40s, sometimes late 30s or early 50s, who have been married for 20 years and have two or four kids, and they've just kind of realized, like, I think that I've been queer and just trying to deny it, or I think I might be gay. And there's a tremendous amount of pain in realizing that maybe the identity that I've had for 40 years doesn't fit me anymore. And I think it comes from a lot of these social stories that we have around, you're born a certain way, you stay that way, your identity is your identity, and if it changes, then you were lying or you were hiding from something, instead of recognizing that actually a lot of the things that contribute to our identities are so, so based on the experiences we have, the people we know. I mean, you might be think you're straight, like I did, until you meet a woman, and then you're like, holy shit, like, sex with someone that has a vulva is pretty rad, you know? And then, like, okay, so now I have to kind of question some things. And that, like, our identities can be a lot more fluid, but I think that's scary for people because then that means we have to live in a place where we're comfortable with uncertainty.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I mean, people never think about those who come out super late in life. Mm-hmm. And there's so many people who don't come out as gay or bisexual or trans until their 40s or 50s or 60s. Mm-hmm. Like, I've heard of some trans women who transitioned very, very late in life. And it's like, they'll say that, like, the very common narrative is like, oh, I knew it from when I was 4 or whatever. But so many people are just like, I didn't know what was wrong. Like, something felt weird, something felt off, but I didn't know. Or just had no idea until they were exposed to, like, this is an option. And they were like, whoa, shit, that's an option? Like, are you serious? Like, I can be that?
Yeah.
It's just wild.
Yeah, it is. And, like, kind of circling back to the genital preferences, I think so much of that also goes to everything that we're told in our culture and everything we learn is about very specific kinds of sex being acceptable. And when we start kind of breaking that apart, which is like 90% of what I do on this show, of like, sex is not penis in vagina intercourse. It is one of like 10,000 different things. And so I think that that also makes people uncomfortable because now they have to start kind of rewriting the stories about what sex even looks like. And so if I'm rewriting the stories around sex, then maybe that starts rewriting some of the stories around like genitals and what role they play. And I think that those are some like really big, scary questions for people sometimes. But like, you're so right that when we're talking about being attracted to men or women, usually what we're doing is saying certain types of genitals are acceptable to me and other types of genitals would label me something I'm not comfortable with, and so I have to reject them.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so much of the discourse within like lesbian communities is like just anti-penis, like as a point of pride, because like penis equals man. And, like, I get that. Like, I get rejecting, like, heterosexuality and, like, taking pride in being hella gay. But I think there has to be recognition that, like, there are women who have penises and that that kind of language is very can be very harmful to them.
Yeah.
And what you were talking about with sex, I think one of the best analogies that I could find when I was trying to talk to people about, like, examining their own biases is how a lot of straight guys won't put anything in their ass because they think it's gay. And they just, like, believe that so vehemently, and they're like, I would never like it, that's disgusting, like, keep it away. And then if you, like, tell them that it feels good and, like, you, like, talk about it, and eventually they're like, okay, I'll try it. Like, a lot of straight guys really enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, really enjoy anal. And that wasn't conversion therapy. Like, you didn't convert them into enjoying anal. It's just you got them to examine their biases and to try it, and then they liked it. And like, the exact same thing could be happening with trans women. Like, you could be despising trans women, and then if you actually tried getting with a trans woman who you found attractive, you might actually enjoy it. And when you talk about kinds of sex that we have, you're right, that's so everyone assumes that sex is just penis and vagina. So they're like, if I'm having sex with a trans woman who has a penis, it means that she's going to be penetrating me. And I'm like, no, like, a lot of trans women don't like penetration and have very different kinds of sex. And that just doesn't seem like an option to people. Like, they think penis equals penetration.
Yeah.
So I think if we could even just rewire how people think about sex, that would help so much. Exactly like you were saying, in like people's need to have a certain genital.
Yeah, because, like, hands, mouths, and toys work for all kinds of bodies.
Exactly.
I mean, because, like, even when we, like, go beyond that, right? Like, insisting that sex is penis and vagina intercourse is also super ableist and ageist.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because, yeah, like, that's just not accessible to us when we're in certain ages with certain bodies that have certain things that have happened to them over the years, or, mm-hmm. you know, because of surgeries or because of whatever kind of capabilities our bodies may or may not have. I mean, like, there's just so many people for whom that kind of sex does not work, and yet it's yeah. still, like, the presiding definition for sex in our culture, which is just, like, bonkers to me.
Oh, yeah, and it's just extremely heteronormative. Mm-hmm. Like, gay people and lesbians and bisexual people are out here having sex that's not penis and vagina, like, all the time. Like, all the time.
Right, and studies show that lesbians have way more orgasms than heterosexuals.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, so yeah.
Let's just think about that.
Exactly.
And, like, just kind of going back to the, like, you might be, like, if you're a cis dude, and mm-hmm. you find out that this woman that you're dating is trans, mm-hmm. you know, I almost feel like it's less about the individual needing to decide that they're okay with trans women, and more about the individual feeling terrified of their social currency changing.
Oh, absolutely. That is such a factor.
I think there's so many people out there who would be like, oh my God, this woman I'm dating is amazing. And then if they found mm-hmm. out she was trans, maybe would kind of be like, oh, like, what's that mean for me? Does that change things? Do I need to do things differently? And mm-hmm. that's a very, like, internal experience. But then I think as soon as you, it's the same with, like, fat people, right? Of just like, mm-hmm. oh my God, if my friends find out, what are they going to say? I'm not going to yep. be, like, popular anymore. Everybody's going to make fun of me. I'm going to become bullied. And it's kind of like, yep. well, you're kind of describing the way that this other person experiences their life yeah. and saying, I can't handle that. But then that fear of kind of the social rejection and, like, currency drives people to all kinds of terrible, like, terrible traumatic behaviors, including Absolutely. Up to, like, violence and murder.
Yeah. No, that happens all the time. Like, exactly the social currency thing you're talking about. Trans women get murdered for that. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I forgot where I was going with that.
Yeah, you're just
but
like,
you're just, you're right. You're that. Right. Like, yeah.
Well, I like being right, so I'll take that. So there's one other thing, kind of in this realm that I want to touch on with you. Mm-hmm. And it is, so there's a couple of places I've gone with this in the past, but I'm really excited to go here with you. Okay. I periodically get emails from cis guys who... Uh-huh. You know, their email is kind of, you can feel it's this, like, whisper in the dark that they're hoping, like, no one will ever know they send. And, you know,
okay.
and it's this, like, hey, I like shemale porn and trans women porn. What does that mean? And there's this, like, deep distress in...
Oh, yeah.
in liking porn with trans bodies. Now, in the past, I've definitely talked about how, like, mainstream porn that's labeled shemale is super problematic, right? Like, it's so problematic and, like, just reinforces so many of the really, really harmful trans stories and narratives that mm-hmm. we have. And so, like, to me, it's a little bit different if you're watching, like, mainstream, you know, in quotes, shemale porn on, like, mm-hmm. you know, Pornhub versus if you're watching, like, trans women in Crash Pad series or,
yeah.
you know, Chelsea Poe or something like that. Like, that's a little bit different. But, you know, you kind of were talking about how, like, if you're dating a trans woman, like, that's a woman, so you're still straight. And so mm-hmm. can we just kind of unpack this a little bit? Because I there's so many people out there who are like, oh my God, it must mean something.
Yeah, I mean, it's... there's... In terms of porn and fetishization, like, just the very fact that all of the porn that's about trans women uses, like, slurs against them,
ugh,
like, shemale or tranny or whatever, like, that's always what the porn is called. And those are, like, literal, like, slurs.
Yes.
Like, just the very fact that to look it up, you have to use, like, a very insulting, demeaning, dehumanizing word, mm-hmm. I think says a lot about it and puts certain thoughts in your mind when you're looking it up that, like, these people are worse than, like, normal quotation people.
Right.
And it's that kind of porn is, like, it's like all mainstream porn. It's made for a very specific audience. It's made for, like, straight dudes. Mm-hmm. And so it's shown in, like, a very specific way, exactly like how you were saying, like, if just two trans women were having sex, it's probably much different than how, like, mainstream porn is depicting a trans woman and a cis guy having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And so porn, warps our realities in a lot of ways around sex, even just around like heteronormative sex or lesbian sex or whatever. But when it comes to trans people, the fact that they have to go into like their own section, like you could never look up lesbian sex and have like a trans woman in there.
Right.
Like, people would just like fight against that so hard. Or you couldn't have like gay male sex and have a trans man in there because people would be like, oh, why is there a vagina in my like gay male sex? And that I think plays a part, at least in our like othering of trans people.
Yeah.
And being like, well, they're not like these normal people over here having sex. They're like over there in that like gross, dirty category. Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, I think it kind of reinforces the whole guys being into this and not being able to admit that they're into it, because there's such a stigma around that kind of porn that like they can't accept or say out loud that they like that stuff, because they know that it's like socially wrong.
Yeah.
And that it makes them deviant and weird or whatever. And I hate that it's that way. Like if trans people were respected and like thought of as a normal part of society, it would just be a normal thing that you liked, you know?
Right. Right. It would be like, I went to this queer porn film festival a couple of years ago. Yeah, it was in Brooklyn, and it was totally like a DIY festival where like we all just sat on the floor, and then they just like streamed porn up on the wall. And
amazing.
Yeah, and a whole bunch of rad people were there, like Jiz Lee and Stoya. And But the thing I loved the most about that was they literally just kind of showed a film, talked about it a little bit, showed a film, talked about it a little bit, and it wasn't like broken into these kind of like arbitrary categories. And so because of that, like one film would be like two trans men having like ridiculously gay male sex. And then, you know, like in the next film, like Chelsea Poe was there and answered questions, and it was amazing. And so like in another film, it was like this super sweet lesbianic porn that took place at like San Francisco Pride, and these two like super cute girls were totally like, you know, touching each other under their clothes, and then they went upstairs and fucked, and then like, and then you find out that Chelsea Poe is a trans woman. But like that wasn't, it wasn't like the narrative revolved around her being trans. The narrative revolved around these two lesbians having super rad lesbian sex. And it was just like film after film was presented in that way of like, the people were allowed to simply be who they were in their bodies, exactly as they were, with their gender identity honored as it was. And like, maybe their genitals were a little bit different than you thought they were once the pants came off. But like, then you were like, cool, this sex still seems super hot. And it wasn't like a special category thing. And like, I so want more of that.
Me too. I mean, that kind of queer porn would do so much to just normalizing it. Like, seeing, I think if people who like hated the idea of sex with trans women actually saw like trans women having sex in porn, like in a way
on
that
their
they
own
naturally
terms.
Would.
Right.
Yeah, in a way that they actually would, instead of like in a way that's for like men. I think they would see that it's actually much different and actually something that they would probably like. Like it's it's just like sex between like, for instance, a trans woman and a cis woman, I think is much more similar to sex between two cis women than it is between like sex between a cis man and a cis woman. Like it's it's so gay. Like
it's so lesbian.
Yeah,
it's so lesbian.
It really is. It really is. And people just have this really warped idea of what it looks like. Like if you actually see it, it's like it's clear that it's very queer and very lesbian. I mean, yeah, I don't know how else to put that.
Yeah, and like that even just ties to like when we're thinking about kind of like mainstream lesbian porn versus like porn made by lesbians. You know, it's not to say that there aren't lesbians out there who aren't like super high femme with long nails who fuck each other the way that you see in like, you know, Pornhub type lesbian porn clips.
Yeah.
But that's like such a small part of the much bigger story. And I often think people are so shocked when they go to something like Crash Pad, for instance, where it's like lesbians and queer folks filming lesbian and queer sex, just however they have sex, and there happens to be a camera there and like a little bit of a story around it, it looks really, really, really different.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so like, that's one of the reasons why I am constantly espousing like ethical and feminist and queer porn on the show, and like pay for your porn, because like, I think for people who are interested in trans porn, if you've only ever seen trans porn on like one of the big aggregator sites, then you're not really seeing trans porn. You're seeing straight people making what they think trans people look like.
Oh, that's so true. So true.
Right?
Yeah. No, it really is. Like, you're right. And people don't think about how strongly porn affects us in that manner. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, lots of people watch porn. Like, the amount of people who watch porn is ridiculous, and it influences our sex education in so many ways.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. And, like, I think it also influences what we start to see as normal representations of how we should be behaving in the bedroom.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
you know,
I think, like, most people would get their idea of what sex should look like before they're even having sex from porn. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no other way to get that information.
Yeah, exactly, because we have terrible sex ed, so.
Yeah, yeah.
Enter exactly. This show among others.
Yeah, for her.
Get your information here, folks. One of the other things that I just kind of wanted to, like, touch on, because I think it's really interesting, and it's not something I've ever talked about on the show before, is... when you first started making YouTube videos, you really just kind of wanted to, like, make videos about, like, TV shows and culture and,
yeah,
and like, politics,
so,
and you didn't want it to be, like, hey, I'm this trans expert kind of thing.
Well, yeah, no, I didn't even... when I started videos, I hadn't come out yet. Like, even to myself, I think I was still, like, questioning my gender at the time. And I think... I forget exactly the timeline of it, but I kind of came out early on into my channel, and I never made like a coming out video. I just kind of started talking about it, and those videos in particular like seemed to strike a chord with people, and so I talked about it more and like clarified more things and found things that people weren't talking about and tried to talk about them, and so it just kind of expanded into that. But like, by no means was that my goal. Like, I wasn't like, I'm gonna go be a trans educator now. Like, it just happened to be a thing going on in my life that I wanted to talk about while I was making videos about my life.
Yeah. And I think that's so important, right? Of just like, there's two kind of groups of people who are feeding that. One is, there's really, even though it seems like there's lots and lots of conversations happening around trans and queer issues these days, like, just generally in the world at large, there are still so many people who are in communities and in places where they feel super isolated. And so know that there's someone like you out there who's very visible and public and articulate and talking about your experience, like, for them, that feels like this, like, you know, life raft that they get to cling to, that they're not alone. But then there's this kind of like cultural weirdness that I think we talked about a little bit in the beginning, of just like people all of a sudden are like, oh my God, there's a trans person. So now we have to just like make it all about their transness and not just like that they're a person that talks about cool things. And kind of like this centering of your most like visibly marginalized identity.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, I definitely talked about this in the beginning, but I try so hard to not be like just a trans person on YouTube. Like, I really want to be known for other things. I'm like, I have insight on things that aren't trans stuff, guys. Like, listen to me. But when you're talking about people in like small communities or whatever, where they don't have any access to this information except like maybe through my videos or some other stuff they find online, I get messages every once in a while that are like that are like, you've helped me so much, you've helped me come out or transition or whatever it may be, and that just makes me so freaking happy. But they're compared to the amount of shit that comes in every day, they're few and far between. Like, they're not uncommon. Like, I get emails and messages like that relatively common, but like, it's just pales in comparison to all the rest of the shit. Like, people who like you and appreciate you will reach out like every once in a while, and people who hate you will reach out every day. Like,
yeah,
it's such a disconnect in how you perceive how people perceive you. Mm-hmm. Like, there are days where I'm like, everybody hates me. Like, yeah. Everybody hates me. And then I'll get, like, a bunch of messages being like, thank you so much for this video. Like, it helped me so much. And it just, like, it's like, whoa, I'm actually helping people. Like, it's so hard to gauge how other people are responding to you.
Yeah, so that's something we talked about a little bit before we actually hopped on, and I just kind of want to mention it for everyone listening, of like, I personally, and I'm not saying everybody has to agree with me, but I personally, and Alex, you know, when I was watching your videos, I was so excited by your perspective and how intersectional you are and the conversations you have and the ways that you're really making space for a variety of experiences. You're not like forcing everyone to be in these binaries, and you're also kind of highlighting a lot of the ways that our cultural narratives and myths reinforce really harmful things. And so I'm watching your videos feeling so excited by these like really smart and interesting conversations that you're having, and then like noticing that there's like 1800 likes and like 20,000 thumbs down, and then when I read the comments, it's just like there's one kind comment for like every 100 like shit talkers. Exactly. And one that breaks my heart, because I don't want that to be a reason that you stop doing this because it's so great, but like two, how do you keep going when like that's the shit that you're swimming in? Like, it's just, I saw that and I got so angry on your behalf. I was just like, who the fuck do these people are?
Yeah, I mean, my strategy has been to ignore it completely. I mean, I used to, I think a little over a year ago, I was still reading every single comment on my channel and replying to most of them. I was so accessible. Like, you could comment on any of my videos at any time, and I would, like, go reply to you. And I loved that, and it was great. And then people would make response videos to me, and, like, out of nowhere, I'd wake up and, like, 300 comments on a video. And I'm like, I can't. That's too many for me to go through. But then I'd feel so compelled to go through it, and I'd sit there for hours, like, reading all 300 of these comments and, like, arguing with a few of them, or, like, just having sassy responses to a few of them. And it continued like that, and it just drained so much of my time and like emotional energy, because I just feel like shit afterwards, that I just had to stop looking at the comments, turning off my notifications on all of my social media things where people were constantly like sending me shit messages and whatever, and that has helped a lot, like a lot.
Yeah.
Because so much shit happens online about me that I just don't know about. <I'm>
like, and let's great. Leave it that way.
Yeah, I'm like, great, just yell into the void. Like, those videos that are, like, mass disliked have thousands and thousands of comments that I've never seen. Mm-hmm. And I kind of enjoy that people write essays and then I never see them. And people will, like, email me and be like, well, did you see my response video? I, like, have made all these videos about you. And I'm just like, bro, I don't know who you are. Like, I just have no idea who you are. And I really enjoy not giving them the power of me even, like, acknowledging their existence.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just YouTube has created a culture of that, of response videos do really, really well. And making people angry and sending them to a video is a very reliable way to get views. Like, if you make a video about genital preferences, it probably won't get viewed that much. If you make a video about genital preferences responding to Riley Dennis, you're going to get a shit ton of views. Like, yep. It's YouTube is made for it. It's just engineered specifically for that kind of community.
Yeah, I noticed you had done this really great, thoughtful, like, I can't even tell you how many facts you included in this video around, like, transgender and gender dysphoria, and how, like, transgender is not a mental illness. And it was so thoughtful, and you had, like, I don't know, 100 facts in this video, and it was pretty much not even your opinion. You were just, like, reading definitions and sharing, like, the APA definitions from the DSM and, like, all this kind of stuff. And you had, like, I don't know, 30,000 views, which in my mind is, like, that's a lot. But then, like, in the little YouTube thing on the side, there was a response of, like, transgender is a mental illness, and it had, like, 600,000 views. I was like, what the fuck?
Yep. And that's, I mean, there's a couple things there, but one of them is that I get messages from people all the time who are like, I love your videos, but I hate watching them because the whole sidebar is just like, why Riley Dennis sucks? Like, why being trans is the worst? Like, YouTube's recommendation algorithm, like, makes it so that if you want to watch my content, you have to be exposed to all of this shit to some degree.
Yeah.
And that can be very harmful for, like, little trans people who are just trying to watch my channel. And it makes me so mad that I can't do anything about that. And I've complained about YouTube to this many times, about this many times, and they haven't done shit. But anyways, so that's a thing. But also, with my videos, I've leaned much further into, like, research. Like, I used to just, like, I would always cite a couple things, but I would mostly just be talking, like, what I thought and believed about a certain topic. And then people would be like, oh, well, you can't prove that, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm like, okay. And I'd make a 15-minute video citing, like, 20 different, like, actual scientific studies, and people are still like, oh, I don't believe it. I'm like, just, that's not how it works. Like, it's kind of frustrating that no matter how much I cite and no matter, like, how many facts I use, like, people are just going to be like, nah.
Yeah.
Like, there are literally people on that being trans isn't a mental illness video that are just like, yeah, but isn't it, though?
Yeah.
And I'm like, did you watch the video? Like, you're not responding to anything in the video. You're not, like, it just blows my mind.
Yeah.
Like, you can't argue with some people, and those people seem to be concentrated on YouTube.
Yes. Yeah, I think they live on YouTube and Twitter, and that's their life.
Yeah.
So I just want to tell everybody who's listening, like, one, please go watch Riley's super amazing videos. And, like, one of the other things that's really cool about your channel is you're regularly collaborating with other people like Cat Black or other trans folks or non-binary folks. And so it's an opportunity to just, like, see lots of YouTubers that are doing really inclusive, cool content. But, like, I also just want to name, like, I'm always telling all the listeners, pay for your fucking porn, pay for your porn, pay for your porn, pay for your porn. Please, Riley also has a Patreon, and so if you want to make sure that this kind of inclusive, intersectional, thoughtful content is getting out into the world, like, please go to Riley's Patreon and throw a dollar or five or however much feels good, just to help make sure that this kind of content keeps happening.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah,
you're welcome.
That'd be great.
So I would love to end if you could just share with everyone how they can find you online and stay in touch.
Oh, yeah. I'm just everywhere as Riley J. Dennis. J, like, spelled out, like, J-A-Y. And, yeah, that's pretty much me everywhere. I've got YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, all the things. You can come find me.
Awesome. Well, I will link to, of course, your YouTube and your Twitter and all those great places on sexgetsreal.com for this episode. And if you've got any thoughts, questions about our chat or anything that you'd like to share with me about other episodes, there's a contact form there. Riley, I want to thank you so much for being here with me and, like, just geeking out. This was just, like, so much fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Good. To everybody who listened, thank you so much for joining us. I will talk to you next time. I'm Dawn Sarah. Bye.